Thank you. All right, let's begin by turning to Romans chapter 6. I want to use something here just as a jumping off for a category that I titled this one paragraph, Jesus' Life Out of Death as a Prototype. How many of you know what a prototype is? Okay. For those who don't, if for example, in Detroit, if they're going to build a car and it's a new style and new something else, they will build what's called a prototype. And that prototype is not the actual thing, but it is the first original version of it is what it is. It's the first original version, and everything else is going to be made after that because they've got it to the point of making a prototype. And so it would be like a master copy. Well, Jesus is the real. And so in Romans 6, verses 3 and 4, know ye not that as many of us as were baptized into Jesus Christ were baptized into his death? Okay, well, there, right there, you have the Bible telling you that if you were baptized into Christ, then you were baptized into his death. There's no way around that, you know. It's not just, well, most people refer this to water baptism here, but the truth is water, the word water is never used here. But nonetheless, water baptism is a type or a picture or a an example of what baptism into his death does represent. And so if someone were baptized in water, and sadly many are baptized in water, and the only explanation they're given is that you went down dirty and now you're coming up clean. And that's not faith. You know, you're supposed to be a faith that's expressed there in that event. And it's supposed to be a big faith. I mean, that's why many people come up out of the water going, woohoo, because it's supposed to be a big deal. Obviously, they're already saved, so they're not coming up going, I'm saved, you know. But for some, maybe they did get saved and then instantly baptized. But for most, I think they think that it is some sort of a declaration or a ritual that says, I am now a Christian. I am now a Christian. But whether it be water baptism or the actual truth that I believe that it applies to, then that is an actual baptism into Jesus' death. One way or the other, whether it's water baptism or baptism into his death, our death with him is what it's all about. And it is a faith in his death for us and at the same time our death with him. As this verse and then verse 4 says, therefore we are buried with him by baptism into death, that with the purpose that as Christ was raised up from the dead by the glory of the Father, even so we should walk in newness of life. Two things that should always be noticed when we read verse 4 is that doesn't mention us being raised. It mentions us going down into death, and then he's raised. But here's what it does mention as the resurrection. The resurrection is that we walk in a new life. And that's the point. The point is not us, not at this stage. I mean, us saved, folks, is chapter 3 and chapter 4. And you begin to realize that Romans is this taking this same ancient path that we saw, whether it was with the Day of Atonement or whether we saw it in relationship to the captivity. But even the captivity, folks, is a thing where when it was done, and Cyrus decreed that you could return. You're released. You're no longer in bondage here. The vast majority. I mean, there was only like about 60,000, right around that, that came back. They were, you know, I mean, they think there's, you know, at least 1 million that just crossed the Red Sea. And I got news for you. They had more kids, you know. And so such a small number that actually returned, but a bunch of the others, probably a little bit like the Emancipation Proclamation, we're free. We're free, and so we're just going to settle here. We're free, and we're going to settle here now. And so they began to live as, you know, it's interesting in the book of Ezra, the actual first coming back to the land, the what would you call it, the civil leader was a man named Zerubbabel, and the spiritual leader was a man named Joshua. It wasn't the Joshua that brought him out, but Joshua, and he was the high priest. But the main leader really was Zerubbabel. And Zerubbabel means seed of Babel or Babylon. Because why? Because he was probably born there. He was probably born there. There was tons upon tons of people that were born there in captivity and never knew anything about a promised land. So some sort of emancipation to them was, I am no longer considered a captive. And the thought never came to them to return, because a return means you have to go back to something that you formerly knew. It would be a return. But it was not a return. And so for them, it was like, oh, okay, well, maybe we're sort of counted as citizens or whatever. And that's where the synagogue system came from. And that's where the temple, you know, in Babylon, no longer the temple was the kind of worship, the kind of worship. You know, our kind of worship is raise our hands and that kind of stuff. Their kind of worship was to give God what he wanted sacrificially. Well, all that was lost. And now it's just go to a building. And let's go to a building, and of course we have to give tithes. And of course we have to read our Bible, and of course we have to do all that stuff. Wait a minute, this is sounding familiar. Anyway, and it totally lost the altar. It totally lost the cross. It totally lost sacrifices. And during that whole time, there were no sacrifices that went on. It's also interesting that Darius, in his decree, when he was telling them they could go back, because they had several of these, had at least three of them, he gave them permission to sacrifice and gave them animals to go sacrifice and told them, go worship your God. How about that? That's getting back on track. But to just stay there and say, well, God, you know, and I think in their minds, maybe they said, you know, God has really blessed us here. Maybe all of that stuff that happened that drove us out of there was God's intention to bring us into a better place. Because folks, before that time, before the captivity, Israel was an agricultural nation, meaning that they raised wheat and stuff like that and animals, primarily for sacrifice, primarily calves and lambs and goats and the different things that they offered. When they came out of captivity, they hadn't been raising sheep because they hadn't been sacrificing. But in Babylon, they learned a new trick. They learned how to handle money. And they got good at it. They got real good at it. They're still good at it. They're real good at it, you know? From that place, or in that place, those who remained, they spread out to different countries. Different countries sprang up, countries like Germany and Poland and all this. And as the years passed by and as the time went on, There came a time when people didn't like the Jews anymore anywhere, particularly Germany, and this was during World War II. And they made a plan to literally wipe them out, mainly because they were so good with money and bankers and all this kind of stuff, and they were, you know, had their fingers in everything. They didn't kill them because they were devout. And so we're in a journey. Do y'all realize that? We're in a journey. And we're not just planted where we got saved, and I'm just using this as an example. I mean, it's not a physical location we're talking about. We're talking about we're in a journey into what God has in mind and always had for our forefathers, as it were, just like for them, their forefathers, except this time we're supposed to return and we're supposed to bring back the offerings and the sacrifices and the this and the that. And this is one of the first things you see in the book of Romans, when it begins to be turned over, when, let me just say it like this. The journey going back out of captivity for those who did go, it was, the journey wasn't, well, you know, like us where we're at and the Lord's dealing with us. Well, we're just trying to establish Christ crucified and become a temple for that spirit and the way that he is. No, I'm sorry. The journey for them began before they took one step. The journey began as they began to say to relatives and family members and loved ones, we're going to go back and we're going to go reestablish what God had in mind. And they're going to say, many of them that were born there, this is what God had in mind. And the prosperity we have is proof of that. And this journey is not going to be healthy for you because it's going to cost you your life. But I mean, that's, you know, it's not going to be good for you. This is, and they're persuading and saying, come on, you know, stay and, you know, I'll set you up in my business or I'll do this and that. And it's all this pull, heartstring pull. And there were probably some that stayed because of that, right? Because of the old heartstrings. But there were some who were already in the journey before they left when they made a decision in their heart. I'm not going back there for me. If it was for me, I would stay here where it's comfortable. Because remember, even though they were captives, Babylon was comfortable compared to Egypt. And they cut out lives for themselves there. But some of them, in a very small group of them, said there was something in God's heart. There was something in God's heart, and it pertains to that place and what we're supposed to do in that place, which is offer unto God. For you're not come to Mount Sinai that burns with fire and thunder and javelin shooting through, but you are come to Mount Zion. See, we didn't just get saved. And that's what the writer of Hebrews is saying to them. You people, you that have just left Judaism and become Christians, you didn't just get saved. You're back at Zion. And we're going to build this thing the way the Lord wanted it. What was really in his heart, not shadow land, but the real thing. And that's the language and the things that they used. And they used the Old Testament scriptures. They didn't have the New Testament scriptures for centuries. They used the Old Testament and said, look, this is our destiny. This is it. Imagine if basically everybody got saved and they said, oh, you know, let's just continue with, you know, basically what we have and what we, and let's not make this journey to Zion let's not make this about a journey to bring back, as it were, the ark, or to bring back Jerusalem and the temple to what it was really meant to be. What if they said that? But see, Paul went around, he's preaching Christ. He's preaching the cross. Sacrifice. He's preaching that. And we haven't even got really that section, but we'll get into that. And so it's being reestablished. Well, for the same thing for us, same thing for that generation that came out, the ancient path, that generation that came out of captivity, they had it in their heart. It wasn't just in their head, and it wasn't a teaching, and it wasn't, well, I believe I'm crucified with Christ, and I believe that, you know, it was, this is, and I can say it like this, this is our destiny. Why is it our destiny? Because it's the eternal plan. You get in that, it's your destiny. You get outside of it, and you're just going to wander in the wilderness. Where do we get that from? The Bible. Where were they supposed to be heading when they came out of Egypt? To the promised land. But they're out there wandering and dropping out there. So that generation that left captivity, and excuse me for getting off here, but that generation that left, first it was the whole mind and spirit thing that they had to get settled. And to be looked upon as stupid because you're making this journey. You're going to a place, first of all, it's dangerous all the way there. And the place you're going to go to is not what you thought it was. It's destroyed. And it's just going to be work. It's going to be hard on you. Stay here and let it life be easy on you. They had to make, and they did. They made those decisions. Some it was a pulling and a this and that, but eventually, you know, your heart, where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be. And that's kind of one of the things that proves that Jesus really is your treasure. We say, I have this treasure in earthen vessel. Well, where's your heart? You know, I mean, you have to look at this stuff and take it for what it is. And when they left, they'd already settled. They'd already gone to war with parents or family or whatever because their view of what God wanted was different from the view of those who were born in Babylon and thought this is what it was all about. And so they start the journey. And the journey, I believe, and this is just me, but I believe that journey is the same journey that Romans gives us. I believe that like Romans 3 and Romans 4 are the decree from Cyrus. You're free, and some read that as we're free where we are just to be Christians, and some read that as let's journey through Romans. Let's go through all the different aspects of this. You do have to work it. I mean, once you get out of 3 and 4, chapter 5, now it's one man. It's not you. You have to face that by one man, Adam or Christ. And you have to face that and you have to go, you know what, this thing, I'm not as big and as important as I thought I was, but Jesus is, and I choose to be in Him. Okay? But these are all theological things that you're working on as you're heading towards the land, see? You're not, these, they're, at that point, they're just theologically presented even. And then you get into Romans 6, and you know, you're crucified and this and that, and you go through all that, and you get, and Romans 7 deals with the law. So you're dealing with all of this stuff on in the journey, but you're not dealing with Him stuff. You're not dealing with living by that life yet. It's not living it. It's all basically theological, but all true and all right. And you have to get that in you. And the journey will do it to you. It'll work it in you so that when you get into the land, you can live it. So when you get into the land, you can live it. So there's all of these obstacles, and there's the law, and oh my God, and I mean, I can hear the voices still ringing as you're, you know, halfway to the promised land and halfway from Babylon, and it's still, well, you know, it says in the scriptures, you know, and the law says that, you know, you should be with your family or something. I don't know. You know, something, you know, that, you know, they were hit with the law of this thing. You know, you need to, you'll be outside of the will of God. Well, I won't be outside of Christ. I mean, I still live in Him and move in Him and have my being in Him. And so there's all of that that's going on. And you know what? You go through all of that. You're making that journey from Romans 3 and 4, moving all the way through. Most of it is presented in theological way until you hit Romans 12. I beseech you, therefore, brethren, to present your body, what's the word? Sacrifice. Now, at that stage, at Romans 12 on, what's it going to be about? It's going to be about living, not doctrine. And it's going to present it in a living way. Here's da-da-da-da. And stand up for yourself. Vengeance is mine. I'll take care of it. And don't, you know, all these things that are practical. But to the writer, not to us, but to the writer who wrote that, Paul, who wrote that, he's founding every ounce of Romans 12 and 13 and 14, 15, 16. He's founding every ounce of that on. Way back there before you left, you got the decree that you could leave or you were free. But then you made some steps and you found out that there's this reality that you're in Christ. And then you moved on and found out that there's this reality that you're dead with Him, but He's your life. And then you moved on and it just keeps expanding so that when you get to chapter 12 and present your body as a sacrifice, you got all of that. See, you made a journey. You didn't get in a helicopter and fly to the promised land and they drop you out in a parachute. You know, it was sore feet. And if you check the manifest of what was given them and everything, he didn't give them tons of horses and mules and stuff. They pretty much walked. The vast majority of them walked. What was it? 4 or 6 months? Something like that. A long time. Long walk. Long journey. Long enough to build some calluses in your walk. Oh, I can't do this. I got to go back. You know. Oh, there's a mosquito bit me. You know. You know. All that kind of stuff that causes us to say, well, yeah, I got to protect my body. No, presented a living sacrifice. Under the authority of the cross and of Christ as your life. Walk in this. Use your body now in accord with this. Live by faith. If you're justified in 3 and 4, it's time to live by this faith, which I think we get into next, actually. I haven't even read anything here. Okay. But it's important to see this ancient path. It's here in Romans. It's the same path that they had to do out of the captivity. It's the same basic path, and there are some, just like those who left captivity, it's the same basic path that there are some who, like Nehemiah, I mean, he's the king's cupbearer. He's right next to the king. He is literally the protector of the king's life. And it comes into his heart. Comes into his heart. That this should be the case. That we should, there's something God wants. There's something for him. You know, even in our captivity, look how he's taking care of us. But there's something for him. And someone say, would you, Nehemiah, are you going to give this up for that? It's just going to be heartaches. It's just going to be hard. It's not going to be fun. It's not about fun. I can hear him say that. It's not about fun. Not now, not anymore. It's not about me. It's going to be about him. And I see, I saw today, actually, as I was meditating on these things, I saw this movement that God does and just puts it in people. But they're kind of like serving an eternal purpose that has them. But that eternal purpose is the crucified Lord is not being honored or seen. At this stage, Jerusalem is just burnt and still destroyed. And the temple is torn down. Go, I'm going to say it like this, go rebuild my son. Go rebuild Christ crucified and show him to the world. Go do that. And they're just going, I don't know why, I just feel this thing. I don't know, I don't understand why. I just feel this thing that is driving me. And, you know, the example I always think of is Noah's Ark, and all those animals are all over the place, and God just goes, bam, and boom, they start moving. And they're moving toward the eternal ark, and they want to get inside of it. And all whatever happens outside of it, that's not the issue. I want to be in the ark. And so they just know, and they all started moving all from all over the place, all at once, boom, and just start moving toward that eternal refuge and that eternal being that is Christ, the ark. So, I just was seeing that. I mean, I was more than seeing it. I mean, I was sensing Ezra. And look at the passion of Ezra and Nehemiah and Zerubbabel and Joshua. Look at their passion for the Lord. The zeal of the Lord's body hath eaten me up. And it's like, you know, they question 12-year-old Jesus. What are you doing messing with your parents like this? You're supposed to be a Christian. You know, why is this happening? You've been so obedient up to this time. And he said, now I must be about my Father's business. Okay, he didn't say, well, I'm of God and I have to do God's bidding because I'm a man of God or a little boy of God. I'm a boy of God. I'm a 12-year-old boy of God. But, you know, for him, it was the Father. It was, I'm part of this. I'm not just deciding. I'm not just making it. I'm going to make up my mind. Well, you won't stay with it. Come on, every one of you. How many Christians have you seen make commitments and some of them didn't last like that? Just amazing. How many of you have actually seen it in yourself? Make that. You know, because our heart, we love Jesus. We do. We love Jesus. But, you know, it was Jesus said to Peter, you know, your spirit is willing, but your flesh is weak. Well, how do you deal with the flesh? The cross. No, I don't want the cross. Well, I mean, that's people. That's everybody. That's Christians. That's, you know, I wouldn't want the cross. I don't want to present my body a living sacrifice. I only want to read Romans. I don't want to read 1 and 2. I want to read 3 and 4. You know, because it's just, I'm saved. And I'm wonderful, you know, and God thinks I'm wonderful. Man, read the next chapter, bud. And then the next 2, 3. Anyway, so there is this ancient path that God is unafraid to set it loose. This is what I'm going to do now. This is my choosing. And there will be those who will respond, and there will be those who won't respond. You know what I mean? I mean, you see, you got that nester, don't you? Don't you? You got the fact that the proclamation goes out, and some hear it like, oh my God, I could be that close to the king? I mean, where he wouldn't be king anymore, he would be husband? I can do that, you know what I'm saying? But you got some that are going, ah, I don't know, man. I mean, I'm doing pretty good here, and you know, a lot of people don't like losing. You know? So it's like, I don't want to get in that mess, you know. Well, what's most important to you? Well, not looking bad, you know. Well, shouldn't the king's good pleasure be preeminent in your heart? I never thought of that. You know, I mean, that's kind of the way we are. And then you get some who do come, and they're in there and they're trying out, you know, for the position. And you know, they won't eat what he guy offers them, and it's the best. It's the best thing for you. It'll get you there. No, I prefer, you know, popcorn. Buttered popcorn, you know, and that, what's that certain kind of popcorn that's so good? Kettle corn. I like kettle corn. And so the division continues. But you see it in all of these paths because it's an ancient path. It always will require first a commitment, and the commitment has to come to such a point that it's no longer about a commitment. It brings you to the cross. It's a death. Doesn't that make sense? But you do have to, that commitment is first. But it's not to any man or on any, what we call an altar. How stupid. I mean, really, up here, you know, this is an altar call. Well, okay, let's not get legalistic or whatever on it, but it certainly is no altar unless we make it an altar. And that's possible. That's possible. So this ancient path is a prototype, or Christ crucified is the prototype from which it gets any form at all. And if it doesn't have Christ crucified as its prototype, then the form is wrong. And it's not the path, it's not an ancient path. And see, that's the deal. I mean, some of you remember when we first started this course and we went several classes just reading scriptures over, a bunch of us, but reading about the ancient paths and about how some remove the markers of their ancient paths and they set up new roads. Well, hey, I've got an idea. There, see, we're already in trouble right there. But I've got an idea. I know how to do this more economically, where there won't be such loss of life at Calvary. You know, it won't be all this blood. Because, I mean, think of how the massive amount of blood they had to deal with. It won't be all this blood. It won't be this. We'll set up some new roads, and these roads will lead quicker to what we want. And we'll put fast food restaurants all along it, you know. And it'll be so nice so that you can stop and relax. And they'll have air conditioning, you know. And it won't be that road from Babylon to Jerusalem that's fraught with dangers and, you know, bandits and all this kind of stuff. No, Ours is going to be paved. It's going to be paved. And you'll like it. No more potholes. Okay. Well, that's human wisdom. And it will remove the old, ancient markers that God... It will. It will. Our kind of thinking voids out. You can actually make void the grace of God. I mean, doesn't it say that? I do not make void the grace of God. That's what Paul said. You can make void the... I mean, I remember when I read that, I went, how do you make void grace since grace is free and it doesn't cost anything? And, you know, I mean, my mind's weird. I'm going, and I'd read that and just go, that seems weird that you can void out grace. How can you void out grace? By sinning? Well, that's dumb. Grace covers all sin. So, you know, there I go now. Okay, now I'm going to find this baby out because this don't jive with my kind of thinking. And then you realize that he talks about the law as the thing that voids it out. And even in Galatians 2:19 that leads to 20 where we're crucified with Christ and then 21 right after it and right there. I do not make void the grace of God. I am crucified with Christ is the basic thought behind that. That's God's grace. That by grace he tasted of death for us. And by grace we're crucified so that his life or his nature can live and override our nature. But there's no overriding unless there's a death. You know, we always say he must increase and I must decrease, and yet we spend most of our time increasing. And if we're not, we spend most of our time trying to make him increase. You know, it's like, you know, it's like it's like luggage that you have and you're going on a trip to Ireland or something and you're trying to shove one more piece in there and everything else is shoving it out. It's saying, there's no room for you, Jesus. There's no room at the end in here, okay? Leave us alone. Stop pushing at us. Your religious ways, you're pushing at us. I thought you were praying for this little thing where I could increase. Yeah, well, no, that wasn't what I meant, though, when I said that, you know. Well, it's what he meant when he said it. So, as long as we're alive, we're going to fill it up, you know. What is it? Space hates a vacuum? Nature hates a vacuum. It'll fill it up. It just will, you know. You go... Go dig up all your weeds in your garden and watch what grows next. Even put good seeds in there and watch how many weeds will try to take over. You say, I put good seed in that. Isn't that a parable? Yeah, sure. Sure it does. But it happens in my office upstairs too. God help me. But it's just that thing that we'll fill it with something. And if we're not after Jesus and if we're not getting the Lord and we're not pressing into the Lord, we'll find it'll be innocent things. We'll never mean anything. You know what I mean? Well, let's just do this and that and da-da-da-da. And it will suck the life out of you. And it does. And life sucks the life out of you. I'm talking about this life. It sucks the life out of you. And it makes you a zombie, and it makes you just flow with the crowd, with the cattle. You know, I'm just one of the cows. You know, I don't know nothing here. I mean, I I've told this little picture that I saw a long time ago a couple of times, but it has never left me, and it impacts me constantly. And that was, I was reading a book about the concentration camps in Germany. And this book was a true book, and it was the guy who was there, and he was relating some of the stories, and he said when they got ready to go out the gate to go to work, he said that there would be German guards sitting there with rifle butts and clubs, and they would just be beating everybody as they went, and on both sides. And so human nature was just clawing to get in the middle and kind of hid from all of that. Human nature was just because, you know, in that situation with no medicine and very little food and this and that, you know, they break your arm or your leg or something with that, or, you know, or bust your liver or something like that. It's all over with, you know. So it's like, oh, you know, so they're just clawing and fighting one another. Forget the Germans. I mean, you know, they're clawing and fighting one another and trying and shoving other people out there. And the Lord didn't say anything to me, but I was challenged that if I was in that situation, because of the nature of Christ, I would owe it to those people there to shelter them to my own loss. I would owe his life that. And you say, well, yeah, but you would die. Okay, see, there we go. See, we don't really believe this life out of death stuff, do we? It's like, well, I don't want to die. Well, you, no, that's exactly right. You don't, do you? But if you're ever going to get past Romans 3 and 4, if you're ever going to put into action Romans 5, 6, 7, 8, even 9 and 10, 11, it's got to become real. And Jesus is the prototype. When he died on the cross, and he said, Father, forgive them. They know not what they do. But they didn't murder him. See? I mean, he knew what was going to happen. He was telling his disciples in advance of it. Well, the Son of Man is going to be betrayed, and da-da-da-da, and they're going to come do this, and they're going to do that to me. Well, see, if we were there, and we're one of the 12, we're listening, and we go, well, you know, it's like a fairy tale or something. But it wasn't a fairy tale to Jesus. And I also remember a story when Kelly on Sunday mentioned about the cancer. I remember Marlene Burgoon, and she was a member of our church when we were on Bolivar. She was from France, and she still had quite a bit of an accent, but just sweet little petite little woman. And so her husband, they moved away because of his job and stuff, and they moved up to Maryland. And so she invited me and a group of us to go up there to do a conference. And so we sat around in her living room, and we just different people were reading scripture. Just it was really just kind of sharing a scripture or something. We were just starting off. And somebody read that, you know, that death worketh in me, but life in you. Well, we'd found out that she had cancer and that she had just a very short time to live. And the person, I think it was the person right in front of her before the Bible got handed to her, they read that death works in me, but life in you. And she said, you know, this thing has a whole different meaning right now to me than it did all these years, because she's a part of our church and group for a long time. And I mean, you could have heard a pin drop. It's like, oh my God, she's going to be dying soon. That's why we went up there. We knew that, you know, the doctors already said it's done. And I sat there and I just went, Lord, please help me to not romanticize or paint your heart into little pictures of truths that have no real impact on my life. Please help me to see and hear and feel and smell what you smell and what you experience. I'm not talking about your five senses. I'm talking about the eyes of your understanding, and to not be a drifter for Jesus, meaning just stuff, you just go places and stuff just rolls off of you. I mean, you know, we all know the initial impact of something. You'll go, oh my God, I'll never forget that. And we also know that we can forget it like that. I mean, you can get in the car, or you can, you know, next day and go, I don't even remember how that goes. Because we're like that, because something that impacts us needs to impact us beyond the initial impact. Does that make sense? It needs to impact, you know, and that's, you know, that's actually the translation of Galatians 2:20. That's in there. That concept is in there grammatically from what I've studied, and that is, I am crucified with Christ with the impact that I am yet crucified. In other words, I am crucified with Christ with the fact that it is impacting my way of proceeding, crucified, even now. Okay, now that's a beautiful picture, because that says, bam, he saw something of Calvary and of Christ crucified that was so much beyond just salvation. And he went, oh my God, this is it. This is the prototype for which all Christianity should live. And he spent his whole life preaching it and writing the Bible to communicate it. And said, this is it. This is this. Not what he did for 3.5 years of ministry. Not what he was on the throne beforehand. This is my God. And he said, this is our God. Right here. This is our God. That right there. That's our God. He's a crucified God. Of course, what? God crucified? No, he could stop anything. Well, absolutely. So for him to become crucified meant something. I do want to read some. Faith in life out of death, for Paul, is his theology, but it is also how he lives his life. Faith in life out of death. He believed that Jesus' death brought him life. But that was his theology. But he also lived that so that Jesus could live, and also, as we discover in 2 Corinthians 3, that death would work in him that others might have life. The life he lived in the flesh is all based on what he has seen of Christ crucified, as in Galatians 2:20. This is the life I live in the flesh, based on that prototype right there. That selfless, that God who allowed himself to be crucified for us. The manner in which he grasped the one-time event of the cross is as being a prototype for the way God operates, and that it is to become the template for our lives as well. For example, Philippians 1:21, where he talks about to die is gain. You know, to live is Christ, see? So he says, to live is not Christianity. For to me, this is him, for to me, to live is Christ, not Christianity. I don't live Christian, I live Christ. But to die is gain. Okay, so there is, he says, to live is Christ, but to die, there's the real gain. See, that template has captured him. And then he says, Then he goes, but you know what? I mean, I would rather die and to go be with the Lord right now, but to stay and to, you know, minister to you is more profitable for you than for me, and even though I want to leave and all this kind of stuff, so, but I'm going to lay down my life, so to live is Christ. That's just crazy. It is a man that has seen something that he believes this is the way, you know. Because I've shared that before, and, you know, this is one of those nights where we just won't take a break. I'll just go for another hour. But you know, when Jesus said, I am the way, the truth, and the life, folks, he wasn't the way until he went to the cross. He wasn't the life of anybody except himself till he went to the cross. All of that is related. Here's proof of it. I am the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father but by me. You can't get to the Father except through Jesus' death. Okay, next verse says it. It just proves it. So I don't know about that. Oh, there it is. You know, and I wasn't even thinking of the next verse. Thank you, Holy Spirit. But so, you know, this reality is, that's my God. So I can't go back. Paul couldn't go back. I can't go back to just Jesus of Nazareth, gentle Jesus, meek and mild, Catholic Jesus, or any version of Jesus that is not Christ crucified. Anyway, let me finish reading this. So, just as Christ, who being crucified in weakness, brought forth the power of for liberty for others, Paul sees that by the same method, we are to adhere to it in order to benefit others. And I've got a bunch of scriptures here, but I'll just tell you, it's in the Bible. Okay. In 2 Corinthians 12:10, Paul finds strength in his weakness, which matches Jesus in 2 Corinthians 13:4, that through weakness, Jesus did this. And Paul says, when I'm weak, then am I strong. See, it's a template. He's got it from Jesus. It is, but it's more than a mental template, or it is a resounding eternal voice saying, this is the way, walk ye in it. And he goes, okay, I'm in. So he leaves Babylon. He makes that trip. And that's the question. Are we going to do that? Anyway, let's take a break.